Weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Emma and Graham for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, February 19th. I'm Shane Dawson. You're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Graham Gartland chats Champions League, Rovers in Europe and previews Liverpool's trip to Aston Villa. Nadine Doherty has the latest from the ladies' football leagues while Damien Lawler sets us up for GAA Congress this weekend. Plus, we'll hear from Ireland Rugby's Robbie Henshaw and Shamrock Rovers manager Stephen Bradley. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome along to the show. It is great to have your company. Thank you so much for joining us. Some news headlines first up before we get into the nuts and bolts of this evening's show. Starting with rugby, Michael Checa has held a meeting with the CEO of Rugby Australia, raising speculation that the former Australia boss is among candidates to succeed Joe Schmidt at the helm of the Wallabies. Schmidt will end his reign as Australia coach in October, and while Checa is currently coach of Leicester Tigers, he will finish up at the English club at the end of the season. It is reported also that Leinster and Ireland out-half Ross Byrne is set to sign for English Premiership side Gloucester. Byrne's last Ireland appearance came in August 2023 and he is not involved in the squad for the current Six Nations Championship. British tennis player Emma Raducanu was targeted by a man who exhibited fixated behaviour during her second round loss at the Dubai Championships. The 22-year-old was seen hiding behind the umpire's chair two games into the match. A statement from the Women's Tennis Association confirmed that an individual has been ejected from the stadium and has been banned from all WTA events pending a threat assessment. And finally, hundreds of mourners attended the funeral mass in County Cork for jockey Michael O'Sullivan today. The 24-year-old Cheltenham Festival winner passed away in hospital on Sunday from injuries he suffered in a fall at Thurles. The chief celebrant, Father Gerard Coleman, described Michael as an incredibly talented and dedicated sportsman who lived life to the full and said he would never be forgotten. As always, you can keep up to date with all the latest sports news on the RTE News app and on rte.ie. If we come back to rugby briefly, while some Irish supporters and media may be quick to write off Wales, there appears to be no chance of that within the walls of the IRFU's high performance facility doing similar. Six Nations wins in Wales don't come around often for Ireland, as one of their most experienced players can indeed testify. Robbie Henshaw was speaking to Michael Corcoran.
Been hugely positive our performances, but we know there's lots of room to improve and get better week on week. But yeah, we're hugely satisfied with how we started the campaign, but we know we're only getting going now, and there's tough games around the corner, including this week with Wales away. It's never an easy place to go.
You're an incredibly self-critical group of players, but if you want to succeed at the top, that's the way you've got to be.
Absolutely, yeah, and the challenge is always laid down when you come in and you put on a green jersey, is to always get better and always to keep improving and come into work every day with an attitude to work and to get better. So yeah, that's the goal for this group, and I suppose the standard we hold to ourselves. So it's great, a high performing environment, and when we put in the work, we do get the results.
When you look at Wales, I mean, they've had a pretty torrid time in terms of the number of matches they've played. They've changed their coach as well. There doesn't seem to be an awful lot that can be changed in the space of a week or so, apart from the mindset, which obviously is a big thing.
Yeah, huge. And I know when they play at home, they're a different team altogether. Their crowd are so passionate, and yeah, you know, they'll come out of the blocks firing. So I think they have nothing to lose. There's a bit of change going on there, but you know, they'll be as dangerous as ever, and I think they'll be well up for it. So it's going to be a proper test match.
Does that make them slightly harder to plan to play against, if you understand, given the fact that they're, you know, is a new man in with fresh ideas in terms of what he wants to do?
Not necessarily. I think kind of we have to just focus on ourselves a lot and look at their strengths and their threats, I suppose. But you said yourself, there's not too much you can change within the space of 2 weeks, but definitely they'll have some sort of different tricks up their sleeve, and they'll have some sort of different special plays, I'd imagine, or a different plan. So yeah, we just need to be across our detail and we need to focus on what we can do in the game.
I would imagine, and I don't know the Wales game plan, but I would think they'll try and skittle you and kind of get stuck into you in the first 10 or 15, 20 minutes of the game to to get the crowd on their side and to give them a bit of confidence as well, and they become more dangerous if that happens?
100%. I think they'll want to come out firing shots early, and I think for us it's been a huge focus on is how we start games, and you know, we were very pleased with how we started against Scotland. It was a step up, we felt, to how we turned up against England in the first half. But yeah, that's going to be a huge thing, is to match their physicality up front in those kind of early minutes.
And don't forget, you can listen to live commentary of Wales against Ireland on Radio 1's Saturday Sport this weekend.
Game on.
Football.
But Graham Gartland joins us on the line now to chat football. Lots to get through. We will hear from Stephen Bradley very shortly and chat Rovers in Europe, their big Conference League clash tomorrow. There's a Premier League match. Aston Villa host league leaders Liverpool. However, only one place to start, Graham. The gut-wrenching. I was going to say defeat, but it was a draw on the night. But Celtic bowing out of Europe in the most heartbreaking circumstances. Even if you've no affiliation to Celtic, you have to feel sorry for the manner of that end of match.
Yeah, and they were excellent as well. Their performance didn't deserve that. They probably deserved to go the extra time and then see what comes out. But for the first half an hour, they were exceptional. It's probably one of the best performances they've put in Europe against one of the big teams. Celtic have predominantly struggled away from home in some of the big games in Europe. But they put in a great performance and probably should have been 2-0 up going in at half time. And then you just see the pressure comes with Bayern. Yeah, and eventually it comes and it's just tired minds a little bit. If a midfielder's making a run like that, you try and just block him, maybe just step across his run so he doesn't even think about making the run. And yeah, it's a brilliant run, a brilliant header, or brilliant sort of run for the goal, the header. There's a good save from Schmeichel, and then they're unlucky with the rebound where he kicks it against them. Well, obviously he's trying to kick it away from goal. You're never told to turn back inside in your own box, but it just so happens that the striker's on that side to block it. So it was cruel for them, and you really felt for Celtic after the game.
Would you be concerned now, some people tipping Bayern to go all the way, judging, or is it just a case of, listen, it's a one-off performance, it was a hell of a performance from Celtic, park it and move on, they're still in with a very good chance for going all the way?
I'd be a little bit on the fence. I know sometimes when Bayern were probably expected to go through after beating Celtic 2-1 in Celtic Park, you're probably thinking, right, their odds on to go through, and they can be, a little bit blasé about it, but obviously they come up against a bigger team, a better team, a bigger name in the competition, like the likes of a Liverpool, Barcelona, Real Madrid. You'd imagine that even just the apprehension of playing them teams will raise your game a little bit, and the focus will be a little bit better. They're not necessarily going out to dominate them games. They might have spells in each game, like all top teams do against each other, where they can have like 15-minute spells of dominance. So I don't know. Look, Bayern against the top teams will always do well and get results. You've seen it last year when they were probably a couple of goals down going into one of the legs, and they come back and get a result. So it's not that I wouldn't write them off. I just don't know if they have enough to go all the way and win the competition. I'm not sure defensively that two centre backs are solid enough, and you can see the chances that Celtic created against them. So I wouldn't be so sure on them going all the way. No, I think there's probably better teams in the competition.
Okay, it was a cracking night of football. Feyenoord knocking AC Milan out, Club Brugge also knocking Italian opposition out in the form of Atalanta. And Benfica, Monaco ended 3-3, Benfica going through 4-3 on aggregate. So there was plenty of goals, and hopefully there will be more excitement this evening. 27 minutes gone in the early kickoff. It is Borussia Dortmund 0, Sporting 0. Borussia Dortmund have a 3-0 lead on aggregate, so that one somewhat already done and dusted. Likewise, PSG later on, 3-0 advantage over Brest. And PSV, Juventus somewhat in the balance. Juve holding a 2-1 advantage ahead of the match in Eindhoven this evening. However, the big one, Manchester City away to Real Madrid. Real Madrid 3-2 up on aggregate. Will Manchester City enjoy the underdogs tag going into this, Graham?
Maybe you wouldn't be used to having it. Again, like everybody goes on about, like, oh, Real Madrid find a way to win. And I was having conversations with them afterwards saying, oh, Real Madrid just find a way. And I think they were shown the way. I think City were poor in how they managed the last 10 minutes of the game. There was a clip before Edison kicks the ball out where Guardiola's telling them to play, and then he decides to kick the low one out. To me, you kick that low one out when you're spread out to play and there's a space to drop, to drive it into a striker or drive it into a winger. If your team's already pushed up the pitch, I don't think it's on to hit one of those low kicks. I think you go a height and it allows the team to get up on the game and get second balls off it. So, and then the way they managed the last goal with the flick back, I think it might be in Lewis, the right back. He goes with his foot on the back pass a bit short to him and he goes in trying to nick it. I'm thinking you just have to go with your body. And if you take a foul or you give away a foul, it just stops the attack. And then Real Madrid go and win 3-2. But like I said, I don't think it was like Real Madrid finding a way. I think it was City just left the door open for them. And be interesting to see what happens over here. I think Real Madrid will think they're in the driving seat, obviously with being a goal up and being at home. But City had a good result. They beat Newcastle 4-0. So be interesting to see what happens here. Like, I wouldn't say it's a foregone conclusion. I think there's goals still in City, but I just don't know if they have enough to keep clean sheets at the moment. It looks like they're just being a bit leaky all through the season and obviously in Europe as well.
One of the big talking points of that first leg was Carlo Ancelotti had to choose two midfielders to play in defence because of injuries. And we do have the Real Madrid team in. It's Courtois in goal. Valverde is the captain. Rudiger returns. Asensio, Mendy, Tchouaméni, Dani Ceballos, Jude Bellingham, Rodrigo, Mbappe and Vinicius Junior. David Alaba returns on the bench as well. How big a boost is that to have the likes of Antonio Rudiger back centre-half, Graham?
To be honest, there's a massive shortage of centre backs at the minute, and we see it in our own league, which we'll get on to. But having a centre back that knows the position, what happens is, I'm not just saying this from my point of view because I played there, it's an instrumental position in terms of organising people around you and controlling your team and controlling your back line and controlling your offside line, you know, your positions when you're defending crosses, all them things that come will generally take the lead off a centre-back. Centre-back's not tucked in enough, it means that the left-back or the right-back who's beside him is too far out as well. So everyone takes their line off one of the centre-backs, and when you have an experienced centre-back in there like Rudiger, your defensive line should be better and should be a lot more organised. I remember playing a game against Hibs. I was on the bench. I was due to have a hernia operation, and we played a right back and a centre midfielder, a centre back, and then I came on with 15 minutes to go. I remember the right back just going, "Oh, get us a line here, will you, so that we're comfortable?" Because he didn't know who to take his line off. He's like, because the midfielder was going, "Well, you tell me. You're normally playing defence," and he goes, "I don't know. Normally, the centre back will get us a line and knows when we're comfortable." And that's generally what happens when with centre backs. They'll know, right, there's pressure on the ball, we can squeeze up the pitch. There's no pressure on the ball, we might need to drop. There's a run coming over the top, right, we have to match it or else we hold our line. And generally that's organised by the centre back. And I think Rudiger has been exceptional since he's gone to Madrid. He's been really, really good. Because I probably didn't see that leadership qualities when he was at Chelsea. But he's really grown into his role over there.
We do have team news in from this evening's Premier League match, which we will get to in due course. Cueven Kelleher, Conor Bradley both on the bench for Liverpool. Alisson, Van Dijk, Konate, Szoboszlai, McAllister, Salah, Jones, Jota, Robertson, Gravenberch and Alexander-Arnold. Marcus Rashford starts for Aston Villa as well. However, let us turn our attention closer to home, Graeme. And we can hear from Stephen Bradley, who was doing his Matchday Minus One press conference ahead of Shamrock Rovers' clash with Molde. And it was a fiery press conference, it's fair to say.
We want to go through. We want to be in the last 16. And again, when you speak to people like Matt, when you're trying to sign them, that's the plan, that's the idea, to keep pushing the club forward. And that's what we're here to do, to keep pushing forward.
And you're on the cusp of qualifying for the last 16 of a European competition. What would that mean for yourself personally? And what would it mean for Irish football if you got there?
Personally, doesn't really come into it, to be honest. It'll mean a lot for this club. For these players, for these fans that have been through so much throughout the years, and then secondly off for the league, it's a really, really big step forward for the league, which is so important, and we're showing the path for what hopefully can come after us. So it's an important step. Hopefully we can go and make it tomorrow night, make that step, but it's an important step for us as a club and everyone involved, and the league as a whole.
I see your programme notes slip through the cracks for the match on the weekend. I don't know if you want to talk about that today, or there was stuff about Colin Healy that you put in there that was quite interesting. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what you actually had written?
Yeah, look, firstly, I spoke after the game, not out of anger or emotion of losing the game that we'd lost. It was elf. I'd given programme notes on the 28th of January, and somehow they go missing and don't show up in the programme. I'm very passionate about this league. I'm very passionate about growing it. I love this league. I love this club. I spoke about that. I spoke with the Oilermen's comments. I spoke about Colin Healy, who I think how he's being treated as being disgraceful. I understand to a certain extent what Colin and his family have gone through over the last 18 months. He's lost his wife, his young daughters. I've lost my mum. I'm in at the moment with Josh. I could fully sort of understand where Colin is emotionally, how he's feeling. These past 18 months, I was down at the funeral, and incredibly strong family. He swung it up and spoke and was incredible. If anyone knows Colin, he's one of the nicest men you'll come across in football. Football can be a horrible game. He's one of the nicest men you'll come across. And for us to treat one of our best young coaches and managers how we treated him shouldn't be acceptable. I feel the position I'm in, I'm privileged to be at this club and in this position. And like I said, I feel passionate about this league, about growing it. And that's not just on the pitch with the players, that's with the managers and coaches. I think we've got some really brilliant coaches and managers, and they've got to have respect. I don't think that's why I'm pushing for this LMA to get off the ground, and we're nearly there. But how Colin was treated is can't be acceptable. It's not acceptable. I've considering what him and his family are going through, he has to be dealt with more respect and more compassion than what he was. And I have a responsibility, I feel, to speak up when I see wrong. And I think that's wrong. I think how he was treated in a difficult moment in his life is wrong. It's completely wrong. And I'm not going to sit there and accept that and take it and just move on because it doesn't affect me directly. That's not how we should be operating. Us as managers and coaches in this league need to stand together, and we will in the coming months. But I have to speak out on that, and the reason I spoke about after the game is because I'd spoke about them things in my programme notes, and somewhere along the line they were taken out, and that's not right.
Stephen Bradley there speaking passionately ahead of tomorrow's match against Mulda in that press conference. He did comment further on the FAI and commented on the amount of time it took to find a manager as well. You can, I suppose, understand, Graeme, the point Stephen's obviously making as well, and the whole Colin Healy saga, it's continuing to drag on, and we're getting closer to Friday where the Irish women's team are going to be taking to the field in a competitive match as well. It just kind of re-emphasises the point that it hasn't been a good PR look for the FAI.
Yeah, I can agree. I agree a little bit with what Stephen's saying, is that there needs to be more transparency, and Colin's situation is different maybe, and that had to be maybe forefront of how the FAI handled that, to show that compassionate side. If they are making a decision not to keep them, just be more transparent with it, more upfront about it from the start. And I think that in that way, whatever decision the FAI make, they can stand over and say, look, we've done this as well as we could do, with the fact that A, we're trying to win the playoff game, and B, we're looking at bringing in new staff for the next qualifications, because this group of ladies, or this group of women, failed to qualify. So that's a decision, and sometimes in business there's a cruelty to it at times, but that's where I understand Stephen's point, to saying, well, Colin maybe could have been treated different in that case because of what he's been through. I get that as well, like, you know. So yeah, like, it is dragging on, and it is something that's hanging around the women's team, and it's not fair on probably the women who are trying to go out and play as well, like, and they don't need that, like, you know. And I know Stephen will be close to Colin because they're represented by the same agent, and that's what comes out. You know, they've been close because of that. And obviously he feels he has to speak up for coaches and managers in the league, and he is managing the biggest club in Ireland. So he obviously feels he has a platform to do that. And obviously he's gone after the FAI and other things as well. So, look, it's not a good look for the league when the manager of the biggest club in Ireland and the FAI are at loggerheads neither. Like, you know, so we're talking about coming together and making the league better. And it's something that we need to all get on board with and try and, like you said, latch on to the good feeling around the league and keep driving it forward and work together to increase the infrastructure of the league. The fans and everything are great, and you're one of them, Shane, that goes to games. But, you know, like, Hawker Park loses its power at the weekend, and, you know, and that's the bits that we need to try and fix, that every ground has a backup generator going forward.
Yeah.
And it's tough because, look, the likes of Daly Mount and Tolka, who are waiting on rejuvenation, it's very hard to put money into them when you're waiting on them to get done up as well. And that's the difficult bit that these clubs have at times. But it's really important we just keep pushing the league forward and embrace what's coming with the attention that it's getting as well.
Yeah, there obviously is a good feeling around the league at the moment, and that was highlighted with the record attendance on Sunday. On the programme notes as well, obviously we don't know where the programme notes went. It was officially a Bowes home match, so it would be unusual for an away manager and away team to have notes in the programme in that regard, and there's no clarification.
Yeah, I've never seen an away team have. I know that. I don't see that side, but I don't see where Bowes have no obligation to put in the Shamrock Rovers managers.
I think, you know, just to kind of emphasise that point as well. But on the broader, I suppose, points that Stephen has made, and he made comments around Heimir Hallgrímsson as well after the match about some comments he made towards Rovers players and the outlook from the national team manager towards the league as well. Is it important to speak out right now, or should it be a case of that every manager in the league should, I suppose, not come together, but to have somewhat be singing off the same hymn sheet in order to progress the league and progress Irish football as a whole? Or is there a fear that this might create a larger divide between the League of Ireland and the FAI? Because there has been one there for quite some time.
Yeah, I think the relationship between the FAI and the league has always been fractious. You know, I think that the comments from John Delaney years ago calling it the problem child is stuck and it's hurt. You know, it's that weird, this annoying thing that just doesn't go away, where you're like, well, you know, you're meant to look after us as well. That's the whole point of having it. When you call someone a child, you're meant to look after that. And the FAI, in my time in the league and coming up to probably the changeover from the board, haven't really done that. I think they're trying to do it. I think the likes of Mark Scanlon and even Mark Cavan coming in, and more so with the academies lining up, it's like, well, we have to do this now, and then Brexit has come involved, so they have to do that. I take your point that the managers should come together and say, look, let's really try and drive this league home. The point regarding players leaving, players have left Rovers and gone away and played away, and they probably didn't get in. They probably may have gone into one or two squads, but they were never consistently in them. So I'm looking at it. McInniff went to... Aaron McInniff, who could play for Ireland, and I'm not sure he can play for Ireland or Northern Ireland, but he went to Hearts, and then he moved on. And then you have Dylan Watts went to Leicester. Jack Bourne went over to Cyprus to Apple Weld. Graham Bourke went to Preston, and he never became consistent. Mandroyu went away. So they weren't in Ireland squads consistently when they went away to the UK, neither. So I don't know if Helgeson, I don't know what he meant, and I don't want to put words into another man's mouth. I just got the feeling that he meant when the players were progressing to a certain stage and they hit that level of maybe 2021, how you take that jump from this playing for Rovers in Europe and winning leagues with them, how you take that jump from that to being consistently in Irish squads, you might need to play at a higher level more regularly. If that higher level is Championship in England or the SPL or the Premiership, you're more likely to be in the squads consistently. I think I get the feeling that's what he's meaning, but I don't know. And only Helmut Helgeson can verify that, obviously, when he does his press conference and say, look, this is what I actually meant. I understand why Stephen would take it like, well, you know, do you need to be playing at a higher level, more consistency? And you're like, well, we're in the Europa Conference group stages and we're doing really, really well in it. We have a chance to get into the last 16. But again, making that happen every year is what maybe he's talking about on a consistency level. But the lads have been consistent, all four leagues in a row up until your Shelbourne deservedly won the league this year, Shane. Like, you know, so and that's the way it goes, isn't it? So like, but there is leagues around Europe that, you know, will actively encourage their players to go. Like Scandinavia are a big component of it, where they produce players and then they move on to bigger leagues at a certain point, and the clubs are happy with that because it strengthens the national team, you know, and they're getting compensated for it fairly as well financially. So Ajax would have been similar when we visited them, that look, we know we're going to lose players to bigger leagues. It's their job to maximise the financial rewards for that, and then put that financial rewards back into producing the next players. And we will have a strong, we'll hopefully have a strong Dutch team because of that. So that's okay as well, like, you know.
Yeah.
But Stephen's concern is obviously Shamrock Rovers, and that's his job, is to make sure that he looks after them.
Yeah.
And that's all. And I think that's what he's trying to do.
Just to kind of clarify, what Heimer did say was there's a lot of scouting on those players at the moment. Hopefully they will get a career change from this good success, and perhaps it is looking at the broader picture of players moving across to England. But everything you've outlined there is really understandable, Graham, as well. And he was praising Rovers at the time. Listen, we are pushed a bit for time. Villa Liverpool this evening. Liverpool have looked a bit shaky. They did grind out a result at the weekend. It was a draw in Goodison, much to the delight of our producer, John Farrell, I'm sure. Matches are coming thick and fast. City at the weekend, and they play Newcastle midweek as well. So it's the start of a very important period here. Do you think they will get over the line against Villa this evening, Graham?
I'm not sure. I like Villa away in an evening. Like, I think the evening games just, you know, grab that extra bit of atmosphere for the home team. Whether even Liverpool at home in the evening games, it's why they do so well in Europe. They're excellent. Going to Villa in an evening game, when you know it's Liverpool who are chasing the league, there'll be an extra bit of sort of anticipation around the game, and I think there'll be the atmosphere to be really, you know, high and rocking. So I don't know. If you said to me, look, You go away to Villa, you know, you beat Newcastle at home, you might take two draws out of Villa and Man City and keeps you on that trajectory, I think Liverpool might be happy with that. But the way they're playing at times, not all the time, I think they have a chance to go to City and beat them, because I think City are fragile. I think Newcastle at home in the evening game will take care of itself, because, like I said, Anfield at home. So this might actually be the trickiest one.
Okay, we shall wait and see. Kickoff in an hour's time at Villa Park. For now, Graham Gartland, thank you so much for joining us. Just to update you, ongoing Champions League match, Borussia Dortmund 0, Sporting 0. As I mentioned, Dortmund 3-0 lead on aggregate. We're taking a short break and then we're chatting Gaelic games. Nadine Doherty is standing by and up first. Damien Lawler.
Game on. GAA.
Now, with GAA Congress on this coming weekend, on Friday and Saturday in Donegal, RT Sports' Damien Lawler joins us on the line. However, before we get into a couple of motions that will be raised at Congress, good news for underage Gaelic football. The Lata Hotel Group have taken charge of the sponsorship of the GAA Under 20 Football Championship for the next 5 years. And Damien Lawler, you were chatting to a couple of individuals at the launch today, I believe.
I was, Shane. A 5-year period will bring us up to 2030. So the Lata Hotels have taken over there, and they provided Cormac Egan, James Sargent and Tomás O'Shea for interview. I had a chat with the two young lads. First of all, Tomás won't mind me saying that. Cormac Egan came through the awfully underage structure, under 20s, winning All-Ireland, a dual player, a Tullamore Dynamo, lost the Sigerson final for UCD. Just recently as well, and back into the thick of them with Offaly football too. So spoke to him about maybe what the last few years are like, and he had to just then, Shane, to the from the old rules back to the new rules. And as regards James Sargent, who will hear after Cormac, well, he's been Derry Minor captain year before, winning All Ireland year before that as well. He is a product of the the burgeoning Derry underage GAA system. So between the two lads, what's clear as crystal is, if you invest in youth, you've got a great chance of reaping dividends at the other end. So let's hear from the two lads now, courtesy of the Lata.
It brought so much positivity around the football inside of Offaly, and then we've seen it with the hurlers as well, obviously the success they've had at under 20 level as well. So yeah, look, I think it just brings serious positivity around the people of Offaly, and you know, a bit of belief that we do have good talented footballers and hurlers coming through, and yeah, we can build something for the future.
Cormac, with the new rules, has it made much of a difference to you? Because I think you only know one way to play anyway, regardless of what system is there.
Yeah.
But has it made any difference to your approach?
Yeah, I guess. Look, I think it's sped things up, definitely. It's probably a bit more taxing on the body, but I think it's a good thing. I think, you know, you're really getting rewarded for the fitness levels you have and the S&C you have done. You're getting rewarded for being a serious athlete. And yeah, it's just sped things up. I think, like, there's less lulls in the game, and you know when you're attacking, you're constantly trying to go forward, and you're kind of not being stopped as much as was happening in the past. So yeah, I guess changing your game. Look, I'm kind of playing the half back line. I'd always be looking up to try to get the ball inside, but I guess with the old rules, it was kind of hard to find space and find forwards to actually hit that weren't being double or triple marked. So I guess coming out with the ball now, you're constantly looking up and you're seeing one on ones, and you're able to find boys in space.
Sort of, you're probably just seeing the results now, because it is 10 years ago this year that the development squads were put in place, and you have that from 15, 16, and then you have the minors at 17. So it's just been, it's been one big commitment by the whole county to put that towards getting to the level we need to be at, and we're just seeing the results of that now.
So positive soundings from last year's Derry Minor captain James Sargent, and indeed Offaly footballer Cormac Egan. And Damien, before I pick your brain, more positivity as well from Kerry under 20 manager Tomás O'Shea.
We understood that there was rule changes, but I think it's changed everything really, in regards that all stats that we used to use aren't the same. Possession based football is going to be changed. The game is going to be quicker. The game is going to be faster. Kickouts are different. The ball is going to be moved faster up the pitch. You can't slow teams down anymore. And I think it's going to take us all a long, long time to get used to that. And I'd say you'd be talking about getting next year, really, before they're embedded. And that's the key thing. You know, we're only after 3 rounds. There's nobody that can say that they have the answers to everything. I can say I like this, I like that, and I don't like this. But at the end of the day, somebody could turn around and give me arguments about something I don't like that actually is good for the game. So I just think we have to wait and see. But I definitely think there's a lot more positive than negative with everything that's been introduced.
Congress on Saturday, Tomás, just a final question for you. There's a lot going on. You're still looking at maybe tweaking the format for 2026, taking a round of qualifiers out to bring in more jeopardy. Are you in agreement with that, Tomás?
I would be up for that, Damien. I think it's a packed up calendar as it is. I think, look, there's no point in comparing eras or anything like that. But at the same time, league and championship before, there was a block of work to be done between league and championship. That block isn't there anymore. That time to get pre-season for championship isn't there anymore. They're going straight from league to championship, straight. So there isn't any break. But I'd love to see a little bit of leeway and a little bit of time at the tail end of the championship. And if you can free up a couple of weekends before that, I think it'd be great, because there is an amount of pressure on teams and managers and players especially to produce the goods week in, week out. And as you said, there's certain games that can be dead rubbers, and to have that jeopardy involved, it's a no-brainer really.
So the jury is still out for a lot of these rules, but an influx of positivity for the most part there, Damien.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, when did you ever think you'd hear the words that an 11-point lead is a dangerous lead in Gaelic football, Shane?
Yeah.
Like, in the last few years, you and I both know, like, that'd be enough to win you 2 championship games, if not 3. And I think now we can be wiped out in the space of half an hour. Overall, look, I've been through 3 rounds of it, and it's positive. Obviously, there are stuff that needs to be tied up as regards rules and communication. But at the end of the day, it's an amateur game. It's a 3 games in. And we probably won't, like, we don't have any data, because I suppose people feel it's not conclusive to release data at this stage, because the weather conditions have been so extreme and shocking in the first maybe weekend, and certainly leading into the second week. But I think you're starting to see probably more tap and goes. You're probably starting to see more hand passing as well. The kick passing hasn't come in yet, Shane. That will come in when the ground hardens up. I'm excited to see that, and I'm excited to see how the out and out target men are being used. We haven't really seen that yet, so that's still more to come. I don't agree with everything. I think at club level there's going to be big challenges, the 12 versus 11, unless you've got the right goalkeeper there, not so sure about it. But overall it's more exciting than it was. There's no question of that, and it's easier to watch. And you know, that probably leads us in then to the situation in Congress this weekend, Shane, whereby there are a number of decisions up for grabs. But certainly the football rules have been bolted down for now. And don't forget, there is a chance to tweak them probably ahead of the league final going into the championship. So you might see one or two tweaks just yet, I would imagine.
You have been doing some reporting on a Congress, and I would encourage any of our listeners to log on to the RT Sport website. You have a couple of articles up there. Starting with football, there's a potential new look to the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship format and indeed Tulchan Cup.
Yeah, and I'd say it'll get through. It's a motion coming from centrally, so I'd say it's a great chance of getting through. And what you're talking about there, Shane, is getting rid of the dead rubbers that Tomás referenced, bringing more jeopardy back into the championship from 2026 onwards, getting rid of the round-robin format and bringing in a qualifier system. Each county is guaranteed three games. The provincial championships are still there. That's run on a knockout basis. You get one back door in the All-Ireland series. It will result in eight games less. It will result then in 27 games and six rounds. So I think you're going to see a bit more excitement, and it might free up a week in the championship calendar as well, Shane. And if it does go ahead, then there's another motion interesting to watch too, Shane. Provincial finals will go to a replay, and All-Ireland finals will go to a replay too. All-Ireland finals will go to a replay after the 70 minutes. I think provincial finals will go to a replay after extra time. But that means then that you could be shoving back the championship at least 1 week. So the All-Ireland finals could be played a week later. So that will be a knock-on effect of this getting a green light. So there's two or three motions there in terms of the season format to look out for at GAA Congress. On the football side of things, at least, that takes place in Donegal this weekend.
Okay, from the hurling side of things then, a couple of motions, perhaps somewhat flying under the radar.
Yeah.
The great Liam Griffin championing one for underage dual clubs at a couple of age levels at every GAA club.
And his message is simple. Every GAA club in Ireland should field an underage hurling team. And he lists out the age groups there up to maybe 7 to 10 and onwards. And, you know, developing clubs should play a go games rule to encourage inclusion and enjoyment straight away. And there's a couple of exceptions if the demographics simply don't allow it. And if you're from an exclusively football club, provided the club allows you play with a hurling club elsewhere or a dual club elsewhere, that would be fine too. But there's a proposed penalty of €250 then if you don't field the hurling team in your club. And Liam has been asked maybe over the years to let that penalty go, but he said if it's going to be taken seriously as a rule, it has to come in, there has to be penalties. That fee will double then for every year that you know it'll increase, it'll double for every year that you don't field the team. So basically, he's making the point. You can hurl in Asia, you can hurl in Australia, you can hurl in probably Uganda now, you can hurl in America, but you can't always hurl back home. And the Uachtaráin has spoken openly, Jarlath Burns, about the fact that he didn't get the opportunity to hurl up in Armagh as well. So I think he's trying to address that. It ties in nicely with Willie Maher, the GAA's new head of hurling, who sat down for us there a few weeks ago for 25 minutes. And he spoke too of his intention to try and bring a start-up grant scheme for any club wishing to set up a hurling unit within. So I think it's something that needs to happen from the bottom up, and it's a good idea by Liam Griffin. It's one of a number of hurling proposals on the Clare this weekend, Shane, to bring Europe into the Laurie Mara Cup from 2026 onwards, and to bring New York in there to come in at semi-final stage to play an away game in Ireland. Sadly for the Laurie Mara semi-finalists, they'll be the home team with the chance then of getting into the final from this year onwards. So that's an interesting one. Conor O'Donovan's motion through Nina Aroge to have you hand pass the ball with the opposite hand or to switch it off the hurley. That comes in as well, Shane. Conor has been campaigning fiercely for this since 2018. He's got a support from a lot of counties, got support from influential people like former referee Barry Kelly, who estimates that 73% of hand passes are illegal. It is a blight on the game. There's no question about it. There's increased hand passing in both hurling and football. It comes back to me to a fear of giving the ball away. Coaches don't like players giving the ball away at any level, training, matches. And I feel from a very early age then, the more creative players are probably discouraged from passing. Long passes are true passes because they're encouraged maybe to keep the ball and play through the lines and play the simple pass in front of them. To me, that's sticking out a mile, but that's neither here nor there. Conor wants the hurling hand pass amended. And again, you can read all about it there on the stories on the website too, Shane. So lots of hurling activity proposed, lots of calendar activity proposed, and it will be an interesting enough Congress now. As I say, it'll be knock-on effects there for the All-Ireland calendar if certain things get to go ahead.
Okay, lots to keep an eye on. Damien Lawler, we will leave the conversation there for now. Thank you so much for joining us here on Game On.
Game On.
Ladies football.
Now, I'm delighted to say Nadine Doherty joins us to review and preview all the latest from the Ladies Football League action. Nadine, how's the form?
I'm great, Shane, and yourself?
Very well, very well. Looking forward to an action-packed weekend of Ladies Football action. There's one match on TG Cahir on Saturday evening, 7:30 throw-in in the Athletic Grounds, Armagh against Mayo. Sunday then, an early start, Tyrone Kerry in Healy Park Home at 11:30 throw-in for that one. You would only be making the trip up from Kerry.
No,
you'd hope
Kerry are spending the cash and staying the night before.
And then 2:00 throw-ins in Parnell Park for Dublin, Waterford and St. Peter's Dunboyne. For Mead against Kildare. So three county grounds. We're always championing for county grounds.
Absolutely.
Three out of four. For Armagh against Mayo. Mayo travelling to the Athletic Grounds. Mayo coming off the back of a disastrous result last weekend. And then they have to go play an unbeaten team.
Yeah, it's a big ask, Shane. And I suppose for Mayo, you know, you look at what's ahead. They have Kerry next week. Kildare and Waterford. They're on really shaky ground. And you know, we spoke about Mayo at the start of the year. They lost a lot of experienced players, probably a large majority of their leadership team, brought in a lot of youth, which is always positive, but it's not really working at the minute, Shane, and they're under huge pressure. And as you said, 2 weeks ago against Tyrone, you know, they were up by 7 at half time and they had the game won a couple of times and just their discipline went out the window. They had 2 yellow cards and they just couldn't close out the game. And fair play to Tyrone, Shane, because they really had their backs against the wall for the majority of that game. They were able to pull it out of the bag and they beat Mayo. I suppose with Mayo, it's very, very hard to see them get a result against Armagh.
Will the week break do them good, though, that they can kind of somewhat reset, regroup?
Yeah, possibly. I feel a bigger break does more for teams who are struggling, perhaps, because as you said, you know, you do get those extra few training sessions in, you can work on things. I expect them to put a blanket on Armagh, Shane, and try and frustrate them. And then I suppose, as they have been, you know, they're relying heavily on Sinead Walsh and she's delivering. I'd say she's averaging about 1.4, 1.5 a game. Brilliant player to have back in the squad. But it is very hard to see them getting anything out of this because Armagh are absolutely flying. Listen, we spoke about their performance against Dublin last week. They're 3-for-3. The only way I could see Mayo getting something out of this game is if Armagh do take it as an opportunity to rest a couple of players. But if they don't and they go strong like they have been for the last few weeks, I can't see anything other than a home win for Armagh because they have been really, really impressive, Shane.
We were chatting about this with the men's league and indeed in hurling, say the likes of Tipperary in the hurling, Liam Callaghan, hitting the ground running. Yeah. Other teams mightn't be doing that. Your own Donegal, Jim McGuinness, hitting the ground running. They're really, the workload is up. Perhaps the likes of a Tyrone or even an Armagh on the men's side of the game might be at that level or just their workload isn't
in
the same
yet.
Format. So for Armagh, are they ones that are kind of targeting, listen, we want to go big in the league and hopefully that will translate?
I think so. And they did it last year too, Shane, and it translated. And I've said this, had Amy Mackin stayed fit, who knows what could have happened. And with this condensed season now, Shane, you know, there's less tapering, there's less, you know, load management and so on. There's a game every week, essentially, for the next couple of months. So I think that is why a lot of teams are just going for it off the bat. Armagh, you look at Ulster, there's only 2 senior teams in Ulster, Armagh and Donegal. So they have to take the league as serious as they are. Because, listen, they're straight into an Ulster final. So, yeah, listen, there's a lot of teams going that way. And as you said, Donegal as well, the men at the weekend, they looked so fit. They looked like they were playing championship football. But with that condensed season, I think the opportunity is there to just go at it. And teams are. And it's great as well. You know, you don't want to be seeing these games, Shane, where the pace is so slow. And, you know, there's nothing happening. So I just like to see it. And Armagh are really entertaining at the minute. So look, unless they change it up, they might change up 1 or 2 in the forward line. They might rest Carlin O'Hanlon perhaps in the middle of the field, but I think they'll still go out strong.
Have you been surprised with how good Mead have been, who are joint top with Armagh? They play Kildare, as we mentioned, who have 1 win from 3 matches as well. Or is it a case of they have just regrouped, they've a couple of players back and they look a bit more cohesive?
Yes and no. I didn't know Vicky Wall was coming back the first time we spoke. So, I mean, they're just a different animal with her in the team. I think they are better than I probably thought they would be. And I think a huge reason for that, aside from Vicky, you have players like Kira Smith, Maeve Byrne in attack. You have a lot of these young players who've had a year or two of championship football under their belts, of league football. They're probably playing in O'Connor Cup with college teams, and they've really matured and they've taken on leadership roles. So that has strengthened them. I think we'll see really where Meath are at after this weekend, because their final three games are Dublin, Kerry and Armagh. They have Kildare this weekend, obviously, and if they perform the way they have been, I'd expect them to get a result. They're at home. But I'm pretty sure they're away to Dublin, Kerry and Armagh in their last three games. So that'll show us really what they're made of. And listen, that last game against Armagh, it could be insignificant in a sense. If Meath continue the way they're going, the top of the table might shape up that it'll be an Armagh Meath final. So that mightn't tell us much, but we'll see how they shape up against Dublin and Kerry, and that'll tell us a lot. But listen, it's great, Shane, because, you know, you have to credit Meath with, I suppose, turning ladies football in a sense. When they broke that stranglehold that Cork and Dublin had on the championship, they came from absolutely nowhere and they gave a lot of teams hope. And it was a shame to see them fall back a bit, but they've held firm. You know, they were able to hold their Division 1 status. They were able to hold their senior status. And Emma Duggan is on the sideline. They're regrouping, you know, their players coming back. You just love to see those, get like the Orla Lallies coming back from Australia. That'll be a huge boost. But it's great that they're still at senior, they're still in Division 1 and they're keeping it competitive.
So a lot of big players back as well. And shout out to Robin Murray, last minute save
two weeks ago.
I have to champion the Goalkeepers Union, they
do. Yeah, you do.
Unbelievable save against Waterford last time.
Unbelievable shit. I actually rewinded it a couple of times. It was incredible because she's not the tallest of keepers. And I'll tell you, Monica McGurk will have her hands full to get back in the goals. Because in fairness, aside from that save, Robin Murray, all joking aside, her kickouts are very solid. She's very calm. And I'm sure that's from training with Monica for a long time. But that save, if anybody hasn't seen it, go on the TG Cahir channel and have a look. It was incredible. Shane would be proud of it himself back in the day.
I'm not that old a day. There's a lot to be said for United Churches. Like, you know, might make a return to Gaelic football. On a serious note then, we mentioned Tyrone Kerry, half 11, early start in OMA as well. What is there to, I suppose, look out for here? You would imagine Kerry, well, you're not imagining, Kerry are favourites going
into this. Yeah, they'd be massive favourites, Shane. And week on week, they've really improved. I think they'll approach this game strong as well. And I'd say they'd want to have it, you know, out of the way by half time and then look to empty the bench. And that's with all due respect to Tyrone. You know, Tyrone will definitely be on a bounce after that win against Mayo. But I could just see Kerry having too much, even travelling up there and so on. But Kerry are looking, they're just looking quite good, Shane. They're bubbling away nicely. And I know we talked at the start of the year about how essentially they lost half their squad. But I've been really impressed with their setup. The management have come in. They haven't changed a huge amount, but they've tweaked little bits. And what I like about Kerry, and which excites me for the rest of the season, they're hungry, Shane. They're really hungry. They're not sitting on that All-Ireland. And they definitely want to go places later in the year. They're definitely a team who aren't peaking at the minute by any means, but they're challenging and they're very much in the mix for a league final. And I think they'll target that as well. For sure, they will. They will. So, yeah, I can't see anything other than a Kerry win.
OK, lastly, Dublin Waterford. This isn't a Dublin of old, as has been outlined on the show in the last few weeks as well. Coming up against a Waterford side who were unlucky not to get the draw and frustrated Kerry as well then a couple of rounds ago as well. So they are... They're a difficult side to play against.
They are very difficult. And I think actually, Shane, this could be the most competitive and the best game of the weekend if people are going to buy a game online. Waterford have been very unlucky, very much so. You know, they had a strong start. They beat Kildare. Narrow loss to Meath, narrow loss to Kerry. I think they'll be aiming to get a result here. It's in Parnell Park. Dublin, you know, we haven't seen Dublin with one win in three games in the league in a long time. They never target the league as a trophy. They don't, and we know that. But they have tough enough matches ahead. They have Meath. they have Tyrone and they have Kerry in the last game. So they'll definitely be targeting this for a couple of points as well. But I suppose the Dublin of old, yeah, it's gone very much so. There's still a core group of players, but I spoke last week about their performance against Armagh, that they'll definitely be happy with that because of their defensive setup, for sure. It was very impressive. Their one-on-one tackling was very impressive. They did very well to frustrate Armagh. And what they'll take huge heart from, because again, it's a Dublin of old. They didn't fold. They were 4 points down with a couple of minutes to go and they battled back and they were fierce unlucky not to get that draw. So I think with Dublin, week on week, they are developing. But, and we've said it, you know, over and over, if they are to make a dent in this championship, they'll need the big names back for sure and fit. And I really hope Carla Rowe is fit just for the game. And but yeah, they're different, but they're still playing that brand of football, which is really good to see. So you can see, you know, the transition from Mick leaving and the two lads coming in. They've brought along that culture, like that culture, and you have to compliment Dublin on that. That culture is still there. And that's really, really important for them. So they will keep challenging if that's there.
Perfect. Great stuff. Nadine, thank you so much. You'll be back next Wednesday with Marie to review all of those matches as well. Hopefully Carla Rowe is fit. One man that is not fit, Erling Haaland. He starts on the bench for Manchester City this evening against Real Madrid. Ederson, Kuzunov, Diaz, Stones, Guardiol, Nico, Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, Foden, Marmoush and Savinho is the starting 11. That is all we have time for. Massive thanks to our producer John Farrell, broadcast coordinator Laura Lee Davis. Do not go anywhere, because after the ad break and we check in with the news desk, Dermot O'Brien is up next with the new music show. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. We shall speak to you then. Bye bye.